There are three things that every agency complains that the client doesn't do. Okay. And what are those three things? Well, one of them is begins with B. It's called briefing. The other two things are...
Welcome to episode 121. This is part two of a two-part interview with Simon Rintutt and Carey Evans, who are co-founders of the company Relationship Audits. Now, if you missed part one, I would really recommend you go back to the previous episode, which is 120, where literally Simon and Carey just packed it full of insights and tips for agencies when it comes to strengthening their client relationships. In this episode, we are going to talk about what every client wants but rarely gets from an agency, what a brain trust is and why you might want one for your agency, and why leveraging your learnings from other client relationships you have is a huge missed opportunity. Can you speak to maybe some tips and strategies? What else are you finding that agencies aren't doing that they should be doing when it comes to that initial briefing stage?
When we do the work we do with two-way surveys, right, between agencies and clients, there are three things that every agency complains that the client doesn't do. Okay. And what are those three things? Well, one of them is begins with B. It's called briefing. The other two things are decision-making, right? And consolidated decision-making. So what that means is too many clients will give you their views on what you've presented to them in dribs and drabs. And what you as an agency want is a consolidated response. And so one of the things that I would say to the agency is push to get a consolidated response, not a drip-drip response. And the third thing to mention is it's not just about getting a consolidated response, but it's getting a decision made. So again, if you develop work, make sure that the person who's making the decision is involved in the approval process. Because if it goes through, you only get approval up to certain stages and you are not involved in the final decision maker meeting, that reduces your chances of getting that work through in the way that you want to. So it's not just about briefing, I think is the point. Yeah, right. The agency has to work hard, not just to make sure that the brief is accurate, but also that they're getting feedback consolidated and they're getting involved with the decision maker in terms of a go or a no-go decision at the end.
Excellent tips.
Can I now answer that question?
Yes.
I think one of the things that can make a huge difference is, if you like, training or working with the client to actually understand what makes a great brief. Because a lot of clients don't understand what happens when the brief is actually sent in to the agency and how that brief is actually worked on and actually turned around. So having a simple briefing format that is agreed with a client, that is going to get the best out of the agency and deliver work that's right first time, is very, very simple, but very, very important. Spending a morning with a client, training, working with them, and maybe even adapting the format that works will save you hours and make you more money.
I love that concept of co-creation of a brief. Yeah. I think that's the ultimate for an agency, isn't it? And also, I don't see it as much, and I don't know if you see it either, but getting the brief signed off by all the internal counterparts.
That's the point about the decision maker. You know, you need to know who the decision maker is. This brief been signed off by? Has this brief been signed off by the key decision maker? Yeah.
Key decision makers and internal agencies. Yeah. This is what I'm not seeing as well. So it's both sides. So I think that's we had a
client a few years ago, a very large retailer. Of what he did was he came to London every Friday morning and he had all of his agencies turn up at various times on that Friday morning so that all the decisions that he needed to make in a week could be made on that Friday morning. And he got great work and it was very efficient use of time.
It's a very good tip.
talking about agency services, Simon, we often agencies at the beginning might do a complete capabilities presentation. And then over time, when they get into the weeds of whatever project they're working on, clients, what do clients say about their memory of that capabilities presentation? Do they remember what the agency offers?
Well, you said something very interesting. You've talked about capabilities, which is what American agencies, I believe, talk about far more. If you're talking about UK agencies or European agencies, they talk about credentials presentations, which is work that they've done. Capabilities is about the services that you can offer the client in the future, which I think is very, very important. The reality is that clients know, if you've been working with a client for more than 2 years, a client will know more about competitive agencies that are effectively trying to solicit their business than they will about the people that they're actually working with. Agencies are generally not good at merchandising and marketing what they're doing to their existing clients. Other agencies tend to be better. And some people will say, well, you know, we send out a newsletter. I've still to meet a client that reads a blooming agency yeah. newsletter. The amount of time and effort that goes into it. And if you consider an average client is getting about 150, 200 emails a day, are you going to spend time out of your day reading a newsletter? No, you're not. What you are going to do is you're going to listen to the people that you know and trust. And we come back to this concept of trusted advisor. I remember going to see this client, BC, before COVID, and he was talking about how when he comes back from lunch, there would be 6 or 7 post-it notes on his desk left by his secretary in terms of the various agencies that actually rang. He said he had a hierarchy of which post-it note he would go to first. And I would say to everybody listening, you want to be the first post-it note that they pick up.
Yeah.
Are you that trusted advisor?
To that point, can I just build it to that point? I just want to link that to something we said earlier on, right? So if you present your capabilities, you get on the pitch list, you win the business, 2 years in, you... to your sons, well, you haven't refreshed their knowledge of your capabilities. The easy way to do that is not to talk about what you can do, but what you've done is to go back to the leveraging learning, right? If you do a quarterly leveraging learning session with your clients, they know what you're up to. They know what else you can do that maybe you haven't done for them first and how you can take learning from one and reapply it. So, you know, if you can... create that discipline. It doesn't have to be every week. If you do once or twice a year or quarterly, whatever, you can do it. If the client thinks they're going to get something valuable to them right now out of that business, out of that meeting, they'll want to be in it.
And can I also add to that? There's one agency that we know that has great relationships with senior clients. And what they do 2 or 3 times a year is they invite 4 or 5 senior clients in for a morning, and they ask them in, and it's hugely confidential rules. They each ask each of them to bring a business problem that they're wrestling with. And the agency MD, strategic director, is in the meeting as well. And each person has got 5 minutes to explain what the issue is, what the context is. And you kind of have a brains trust, and everybody walks out with a solution, and the clients love it. And also the clients meet other clients as well. And one of the things that agencies often are very nervous about is clients meeting other clients.
They are clients.
Yeah, they're clients. And I don't think we've ever had an example of anybody, one client complaining about the agency. They love it. They love it. And particularly now, clients haven't got the time to get out and network and meet other clients like they used to. And so fostering that community, that ability to actually network and learn, is a great piece of added value.
Absolutely. You took the words out of my mouth. It's just ticking that box around added value, isn't it?
And it's not, the great thing is, it's not difficult to do.
Right? I was going to say, what kind of formats work? Is it breakfast meetings? Is it evening drinks? Is it lunch and learn sessions? Like, what in practical terms are agencies doing to set up that forum that lends itself most attractively to clients wanting to meet other clients?
I think it varies. It's going to vary, I think. Yeah. I mean, you can't say it's always breakfast, it's always lunch, it's always evening. I think you need to, you know, depends on kind of where the clients are coming from, right? If they're coming from a big distance, breakfast is not a good idea, right? You could do it over a sandwich lunch or whatever. So you have to pick and choose, I think. But the very act of saying, come and meet some like-minded souls. If you've got a particular problem you'd like to share with people from the crucial thing is outside of your industry, right? That's the important thing, because otherwise it could be a competitive steal. You don't want to handle that. So if you can do that and do it in an environment in which is collegiate and everybody contributes and you give and you get something back, because that's the gig, right? You've got to give to get something back. If you do that and you do it regularly and you enjoy it, you'll do it again, you know?
Yeah.
And the agency will get the kudos for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could we turn our attentions to relationship risk? This is what you do all day, every day. You're assessing risk. So what are the clients saying when they're talking about the relationship they have with the agency? Is the relationship they feel they have with the whole agency? Is it with one individual? Talk to me a bit about what you listen to, what you hear from clients.
I think one of the things that we've noticed, particularly over the last few years, is that the relationship has changed. The levels of one of the things we measure is not just how satisfied a client is, but how committed they are to continue working with the agency, and that's been dropping. A lot of agency relationships are based on fewer people. It's interesting that when we do surveys, the agency's putting up, or at least lots of agencies are putting up, fewer people at the client end that they interact with. And also, what is happening more is that a lot of, particularly medium-sized and smaller relationships, are based on one or two people at the agency side, one or two people at the client side. And if you consider, I think it was the Institute of Practitioners of Advertising in the UK, the UK trade body, 2 years ago, we're talking about a turnover of just over 40%. I think last year it was about 32%. That's huge numbers. If you're talking about the client side, I think the average turnover in marketing departments is about 25% a year. You've got to broaden the relationship that the agency has within a client organization. It's one of the things that the management consultants, the KPMGs, the PwCs, the Accentures are so good at. When they first get into a client organization, somebody said it was a bit like the dam busting, that their people are absolutely everywhere. Now, I know agencies are not quite in the same position to actually do that, but ensuring that you've got a profile that is beyond just one or two people will do wonders for not only securing the business, but also opportunities to actually build the business.
Here's another dimension to that too, which is something that came out in an interview I did a couple of years ago now with a CMO of a very well-known grocery retailer. And I asked him about the team, you know, and what he thought of the team and this, that and the other. And he said, oh, they're all very good, he said. But he said, I'm not sure they'd pass our diversity and inclusion standards. I said, really? And he said, no. And he said, they're doing a great job, he said, but there are different barometers of performance, you know, being raised in companies like ours. And the agency can't afford to ignore that. You know? And I was, oh, really? Okay. And so one of the things that we do now is when we, as you said earlier on, Jenny, we've developed a series of questions to make sure we get the right answers to what's going on in the relationship. And one of the things we've done is to include a question about to the client of the agency that we're interviewing of whether or not they believe the agency's diversity and inclusion policies, and many agencies don't have them, of course, but if they do have, if those are policies and they are manifested in their teams, how close are they to what the client's policies dictate?
It's something that probably 20 years ago didn't exist.
No, it didn't exist.
But it's like the
evolution.
And
this is a new dynamic.
It is a new dynamic. What else has changed, Gary? Like if an agency owner's listening to this thinking, oh, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's obviously the new things that I need to think about. What else do you think has changed from when you first started RAM all those years ago?
I think lots of things have changed, but I just want to flip your question because we all think we're all going through a constant state of change, you know, but there are certain things that haven't changed. And in fact, there are certain things that people want to go back towards. So I'll give you a classic example. And it's not agency world, but it's, the principle is exactly the same. I was talking to the managing partner of a law firm last September, and I was talking to him about the issues in his business with his clients. And he said to me, he said, well, one of the things we are finding, he said, is that the clients, they just want more face-to-face meetings. I said, really? He said, yeah, it's really interesting. He said, because they say that face-to-face meetings are more productive, notwithstanding the fact you're seeing people on Zoom and Teams and all that kind of stuff. And he, so the guy said, so the managing partner said, well, has been saying to this guy, okay, well, if you want to do that, we're going to have to charge you more money because it's more time for our people to get to your offices and or whatever that's going. And he said, without exception, all the clients have said, that's fine. It's worth it. It's worth the investment. So the point I'm trying to make is that face-to-face and personal relationships around a table that disappeared over through COVID, they are seen, that value is seen to be redesired, if you like, because it does make a difference if you can do that, not every time you meet, but if you can do it more often, they are, and do it yourself, you find it's often much more productive sessions if you can get together around a table rather than doing it virtually.
There's a massive theme running through everything that we've discussed today, which is making assumptions.
Yeah.
Assumptions about what your client thinks. An agency listening might make an assumption that the client wants more cost efficiencies and doesn't want to meet in person, but actually that the opposite could be true. Yeah.
Absolutely. And our business is all about independently assessing business relationships. But one of the things that we would always say is, okay, we'll go in and do this once or twice a year, but you need to be continually asking, you know, how did we do? How was the work actually received within the business? And particularly with an agency world, people don't want to ask because we, you know, the agencies want happy clients and to feel that the clients are happy. And if they're not happy, they don't want to ask. Well, actually, if they're not happy, then you do need to ask because it will only compound itself and build and build and build.
The resentment. I'm so glad that we're on this topic because I want to talk about what agencies are currently thinking is sufficient to evaluate their relationships. And lots of agencies out there use NPS. So I'd love to get your feedback and views. I can see from your faces already, you know, what are the upsides? What are the downsides? What are you hearing from clients as well about the way agencies are currently evaluating their relationships?
Do you want to go first or
yeah,
should
yeah,
I?
Yeah, we either can go first. NPS, you know, let's remember Net Promoter Score or Net Promoter System as it was rebranded by its author a few years later. NPS is a very quick, easy thing to do. You get in touch with somebody and ask them how strongly they'd recommend on a scale of 10. And the NPS score is that is the relationship between the percentage who scored 9 and 10 and those who scored 1 and 6, right? So you get an instant number. And that's fine. If you've just had an interaction with a person on a mobile phone and was kind of sorting out your problem, then they come back to you within a minute and say, how strongly would you rate that interaction? And that works, right? But If you're doing that in a complicated agency relationship, it's far too simple. It doesn't give you enough granularity. Because let's remember that NPS was established and created to look at business-to-consumer relationships. If you use it for business-to-business relationships, you need to be aware of the limitations. Simon and I went about a month ago to an NPS meeting at the MRS, and one of the things that an NPS expert himself said, NPS is not a panacea. Okay? So it has its uses, but it is not the same as asking more questions to get under the skin of what is driving any score of recommendation. And that's why we developed a product that we call Relationship Radar. Because what that does is it gives you measurements on four key areas, plus the outcome, which is the recommendation. So we look at relationship, we look at the attitude, we look at delivery of the provider, we look at the added value that they provide, and then as a result of all that, we look at the recommendation score. And that gives us a greater perspective on what is actually working in that relationship, what could be a little bit better, and what could be a lot better. And if it's an agency, you need to know those three things. What's working well, what could work better, and what needs fixing. We call that our TIM analysis: transform, improve, maintain.
Love that.
And I think also what we do when we conduct relationship radar surveys is we ask just a couple of qualitative questions, because the perspective is you don't want to ask just quantitative questions. You have to give the client the opportunity to tell you what they want to tell you, which in some cases you wouldn't even dream about asking, because that feedback is hugely, hugely valuable.
How we talked, Simon, you mentioned we should always be getting feedback as we go.
Yeah.
But in terms of this more formal evaluation of the relationship, how often do agencies usually do it?
It depends, right? So we say if you were doing interview-based relationship evaluations, then you should do it probably once a year, because you get, if you do it right and ask the right questions to generate information and intelligence that you can action, and that's the crucial thing. It's not about data for the sake of data, but it's data that you can turn into actionable intelligence. If you do that and you do it once a year, it's going to take you, with the level of granularity you get, that'll keep you working for some time, right? If, on the other hand, you want to do something because you've got a much bigger scale within your client base, you want to do an online survey, for example, then we would say don't do it more than twice, because relationships are a bit like, you know, container ships. They take a long time to turn around. They take longer to turn around than you think they will, okay? So twice a year for an online survey, make it easy for them to do. And if you're doing interviews, then we say once a year, because that will give you a shopping list of stuff that you need to either maintain or develop.
And to the point about how often should you do it, you also need to think about the type of relationship that you have. We spoke earlier about partner. If you truly have a partnership type of relationship, then the review, the survey, should be 360 degrees. The agency should be reviewing the client as well as the client reviewing the agency. Some of the questions are the same, some of the questions are different. And certainly the best relationships that we see are where there are 360 degree surveys actually going on. There is an openness, a transparency, and a desire from both sides to actually realize if you've got a great relationship, the work will be better.
That might be a little bit of a light bulb moment for someone listening, because they maybe have assumed that it's always going to be one way. How receptive are clients in general at offering to, you know, say, okay, we're going to make this both ways?
It is a function of corporate culture. You can't, there is not a straight line answer to that. You say not all clients love it. But what is the interesting thing is that, you know, we work with a number of clients who want us to help them evaluate their suppliers, and they would never dream of doing it unless they themselves were being evaluated by the agencies as part of this process. I think part of the challenge really is that agencies sometimes don't think to ask. because, we can't ask the client if we can assess them. Sometimes you just going to think, if you don't ask, you don't get. And it comes back to this whole thing that we talked about earlier on, which is about perception and reality. You know, the client may think they're doing a great job, but they may not be doing as good a job as they could be. And you may not feel that there's the opportunity to tell them that unless you have a kind of, an independent third party to go and tell them that based on an interview or whatever it is, right? So, it's something that a lot of entities don't do, but I reckon they could get some benefit from doing it based on what we do for the corporates.
I think that's so true. Can we go back to that point about partner? What do clients tell you about that word partner? What in their eyes is it around, they're adding value to my business, they're business relevant, and therefore they are more of a partner? Because I think you're right. I can't remember who said it, but agencies like to make an assumption. We are your partner. So talk to me a bit about the client's perception of what a partnership should be. You're going to say it varies, I'm sure, but are there some principles?
One of the common expressions that lead to partner is they are an extension of our marketing department. They're an extension of our company. Why? Because they understand the business. We can trust them to deliver. They understand our company culture. They talk our language. And you know what? I quite like them. You know, a lot of agencies seem to think that because the client likes us, that's a fundamental point of difference. It certainly helps, but the agency world is full of lots of really nice, bright people. Just being nice isn't enough. Understanding the business, understanding the culture is absolutely key.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's interesting, Steve, because I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about, our radar evaluation tool. But we also apply the radar categories to the interviews process that we do. So we get measures on each of those categories all over the place there in which we interact with clients. There is absolutely no doubt that the area where most agencies are scoring lower or lowest is added value. All right? And you can draw a straight line to those people at the client end who describe the agencies as partners who have the highest added value scores. Because added value is not about what you do, but it's about the way in which you do it. And it includes, unsaid, a huge measure of trust. And the trust thing is what gets you into the partnership box, if you like. And it, as Simon said earlier on, you're not instantly a partner. You got to prove to be a partner. And it's the proof of the pudding makes you a partner, right?
And it's going the extra mile. It's a crisis comes up or a problem comes up very often at 5:30 on a Friday.
But always.
Always. But it's sorting that out and working late or doing something that gets the client out of a hole. Because in a sense, I suppose it's doing the day job, fantastic. But when something happens, and it always will happen, that is the opportunity to go the extra mile, to get the extra points as far as the client is concerned.
Mm, love that.
I think there's another important thing about what defines a partner. I recently was doing a face-to-face interview with a client at a large railway company. And I asked her the question, do you feel a valued client? And she said, yeah, I suppose I do feel valued, but that's not the question you should be asking me. So I said, why do you feel valued first? And she said, because I get to see the senior people and they tick all the boxes of what they're supposed to actually do. But I don't feel special. And you should be asking me, do I feel special? Do they care about me rather than just my business? So I'd say to people watching this, or indeed listening to it, how many of your clients would say you make them feel special? Because I can guarantee you that for those clients that you make feel special, you will be considered a partner.
Very nice. What a great tip. Thank you. That's excellent. Any examples of agencies who are making their clients feel special?
Yes, and it's by doing the little things, not just the big things. It's thinking about the individuals. I mean, I remember years ago, Carey had a client that used to, in terms of corporate entertaining, I think those days have slightly gone now, but corporate entertaining, take the client to the opera every year. And this particular client said, I hate the bloody opera. I just want to go and see Bruce Springsteen. but it's not just understanding the company. We've talked earlier about understanding the company's business, but it's about understanding the people.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good...
We're talking about relationships. Businesses don't have relationships with businesses. People have relationships with people. And one of the things that staggers us is increasingly how little agencies know about the people that they actually work with. You know, one of the things that we always do before we go and interview agencies' clients, we always have a briefing session to understand background behind the relationship, what they think's working well, what's not working well. But we always value hugely what we call the warm-up segment, where you speak to somebody for the first time and you kind of break the ice and you talk about, I don't know, sport, you know, talk about family or whatever. But I think we're absolutely staggered by relatively how most people know so little about the individuals that they're actually working with. Now, some people naturally want to keep business completely separate from personal life, and I understand that. But not everybody. Not everybody. And understanding the people that you work with, not just their business, will go a long way to making them feel special.
Yeah, it's what we call building bridges of rapport. Because if you can do that, you connect on a level outside specifically the problem or the issue that you're discussing. I think there's another couple of things really just to add is that agencies sometimes, you know, see delivering the project as, yeah, okay, we got the business, we created the strategy, we developed the creative work, whatever it is, or whatever the deliverable is, and Bob's your uncle, we're off. But actually, we just want to do more of that upstream stuff. And the interesting thing is, this goes back to where we started, right? Which is understanding your client's expectations. And I've lost count of the clients who said to me, do you know what? They're still trying to sell me some strategic evaluation and go back and relook at the strategy. We've covered that. I just now want this project finished. Get my project finished before they start talking about something else, please. Let's think about, you know, what's important to me is getting this done and dusted. What seems to be important to them is going back and revisiting the strategy or talking more about strategy when I thought that door was closed.
Mm.
And so that's, I think, is something to bear in mind. Your clients don't always want. And I remember asking one guy about proactivity. I said, are they proactive? And he said, I don't care about proactivity. I just want them to get the stuff done. Then they can be proactive when they've done that, right? And that's what that kind of, if you get the behavior right, that's what gets you to what we believe is a better state of play with your relationships. When your clients are not just satisfied, but they're committed. And commitment is a higher level of connection. And in our experiences, the more committed your clients are, the more you're likely to be able to write revenue to that business in years to come. In fact, the Harvard Business School said many years ago, and it's not changed, if you can get 10% more committed clients, you will increase your revenue profit by 20%.
It comes back to everything that we've talked about, making assumptions, but also understanding the individual. Because every client, in all the time we are managing, we are dealing with human beings, it's going to be like this. When we start selling to AI bots or they start selling to each other, all bets are off. But right now we're dealing with individuals, aren't we? People do business with people. They don't do business with the business, but every individual is different. They're going to have a different number of expectations. They want different things, but find out, our job is to find out what they are.
And I think one of the things, and it's not easy to do, but to actually understand how your client is assessed within their own business.
Great point.
I once was talking to a guy who ran a WPP agency in Australia. And he'd worked out a bonus system that was actually tied to his client's bonus system. So if the client got a bonus, the agency got a bonus. Now, I'm not necessarily sure how open and honest clients will be about that. But if you can get even some way there and actually focus what the client's expectations are to the agency delivery, you're going to be going in the right direction.
Fantastic point.
And also in terms of expectations, one other thing is, one of the questions when we do deep dive depth interviews that we have as the last question, which is, if this agency were an animal, what would it be? Now, the reason why we use this is to actually double check on what the client has actually been saying to us. So the animal's not important, but the adjectives that people use to describe the animal, we look at in terms of, is this consistent with what they've said? And I was interviewing a guy, and he wanted to talk about cars. So I said, okay, if this agency were an animal, was a car, what would it be? And he said it would be an ordinary saloon car. And I went, oh. And he said, no, it wouldn't be a Rolls Royce or a Bentley or something, or a Tesla or something like that. And I said, what do you think the agency thinks it is? He said it probably thinks it's a Tesla or a Bentley. And he said, but that's really not an issue. I need the ordinary saloon car every day. I don't need the high value car that I may take out at the weekend. Mm. So understanding what your client's expectations are and how you sit within their framework, there is no shame in being an ordinary saloon car that is used every day.
Great point. Great point. I know you get invited in to work with agencies. The agency owner usually talks to you, might be a client services director. There may be a client services director who might be feeling a little bit like, well, this is my job to understand my client. Why would I contract the services of an external company to come and talk to my clients? And I'd be honest, I felt a little bit exposed. What would you say to those client services directors or agency owners that think this is such a good idea, everything is resonating, but there's some hesitation?
Right, I'll tell you what, actually, one of our clients could tell you this. An agency leader himself who said that we asked him about, you know, why he'd hired us. And he said, I had a leaky bucket, right? Winning business and losing it. So I got you guys in to find out what was going on. And he said, and you've done that in spades. So I said, okay. So he said, the thing is, he said, you know, what we all need to realize as agency folk is there are conversations going on in your clients' offices about you, the agency, at which you are not present. This process gets you in to that office because you've got an informed third party who understands the business, understands relationships, and that's where you get your actionable intelligence from.
And I think the other thing to add to that is that this process is about looking for opportunities and identifying any issues and how those issues can actually be dealt with. But if we had worked out a remuneration system for the opportunities and the business that has been won by our clients, we wouldn't be sitting here. We'd be doing this somewhere on a beach somewhere, wouldn't we? But sadly, we're not.
Love that. It's like surgery, isn't it? You know, why make assumptions? Why ask questions that aren't relevant? Bring in the experts, because these client relationships are the lifeblood of agency businesses. Without your clients, what have you got? So it's like an investment in your relationship. And I think clients see that, don't they? The clients that you approach, they actually see this as a huge positive investment.
They do, Jenny. And the other thing is, it's amazing how many times when we, particularly when we do interviews, because you've got personal contact then, right? You have an interview with somebody and at the end of it, the client will go, wow, I really enjoyed that. That's really cathartic. And it's the other funny thing is, we asked for about 35, 40 minutes to do these interviews, the depth interviews, you know, to extract every last thing, act as a sponge, take all the stuff up. And anyway, so it's amazing. Clients, so they look at their watch as the meeting starts. I've only got 35 minutes or 40 minutes. The number of times that those 40 minutes turn into an hour and 20 minutes and longer is more than the ones that don't. Once people get talking, they love to be able to tell you what they think. They like the experience. The agency gets kudos for investing in the process. So everybody wins, you know?
And I think, you know, somebody asked me recently, you know, why do you do what you do? And I think part of the reason is we make a difference. We make a difference to people's business lives. And what was particularly satisfying last week, I was interviewing a client that I hadn't interviewed probably for about 8 years at a big public company. And it was almost like talking to an old mate, because he was extremely grateful that he was able to tell me last time a whole number of issues that had then been sorted out that had made his business life easier and better. And I think it's fair to say that most clients don't like moving agency because of the time, the effort, and indeed the risk involved. Mm. And if you can make those existing relationships work better, it's better for everybody.
Such a great point. I just want to tell a quick story before I ask you my wrap-up question. But I was so impressed with what you did, as you know, when I left Publicis. I came and worked for you for about a year, and I saw with my own eyes how much the client told me that they would never have told me if I'd have been client services director.
Yeah.
And a quick story about a client was sitting there, and like you said, Simon, it was supposed to be 35 minutes, but it ended up being a lot more than an hour. And he was talking about one individual in the agency who was hugely well respected within the agency. But this individual had been responsible for managing a client event. Something had gone wrong at the event, and this client was telling me the story. And he said, that guy let me down. He said he was like a bloody rabbit in the headlights, and he was angry. And yet the agency had no idea that they'd left the client with such resentment that he'd let him down in this key event that was important to the client.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I don't think that client hadn't told that agency how he felt, but he was telling me. Now, if that resentment had built or that was seeping out and they weren't noticing, what's that going to do to the relationship?
And exactly. I think if you add to that is, you know, we've talked earlier about added value, lots of bonus things. If there is a major screw up, clients will remember that far, far longer than they will remember the bits of added value and extras. And it's how you deal with those issues, how you deal with those types of problems is absolutely crucial to securing a real partnership, a relationship. And you asked earlier about what's changed. I think what has changed, and this may be generational, is the implicit understanding of emotions of clients and how people feel. And that intuitive reading body language, for example, listening to the tone of voice of people, looking at how emails are actually written and the hidden meaning in that, is really important to being sensitive and understanding how business relationships work, or indeed any relationships work. I mean, you always tell the story about the word fine, don't you?
Yeah. You get an email, you ask a question, you send an email to the client and you ask for whatever you ask for, and you want a response, and the client comes back with with one word, fine. Yeah. What on earth does that mean? What's the tone of voice? Fine. Or fine. Mm. Oh, fine. Mm. You know, it's, you know, so reading between the lines is a real, and that's a really thing that we try to do a lot of, you know, one of the ways in which we work with people sometimes is to teach people how to do the stuff that we do. And we have a big section on body language, looking at people's body language when you're interviewing, you know. It tells you a whole bunch of stuff that you don't, that they don't say. But to your point about the bloke who, you client who interviewed about the fella who screwed up, it reminded me of a story once when I was going to see interview a client on behalf of an agency. And this particular client had been a client of mine when I worked in an agency. And I went to see him. And before I went to see him, I asked the agency folk, were there any issues that I should know about? And the fella said there were a couple of things. We had a bit of an issue with planning, but that was fixed a long time ago. So no, there should be no issues, right? Anyway, so I went to see this bloke and I said, tell me, Andrew, I said, big picture here now, right? After we had all of the how are you and all that stuff. I said, what's the kind of big picture on this relationship? He said, bloody planning, bloody planning, bloody planning. And it was classic because the agency thought they'd fixed this, but the client didn't think they'd fixed it at all.
Imagine if you didn't know that? This is the thing.
Yeah.
It's rotting, isn't it? It's festering.
It's what, you know, it's the back to, do you know or do you think you know?
Mm. But, you know, to that similar point, a number of years ago, I went to Japan to interview a rather large company over there, and was briefed by the agency to Kerry's point, very similar. How's it going? Oh, we've had ups and downs, but things are okay. And interestingly, I've been sent by the global account director who felt, he said, my antennae is wobbling. Something's not quite right. And he was absolutely right. So I go in to see the marketing director, a Japanese guy, Harvard educated. And it became very clear very quickly that the relationship was really in trouble. And I said, had I not come to see you, what would have happened? And he went into Japanese culture mode and said, well, I'd have given them another 3-4 months. And then what? Oh, I'd fired them. And this was worth tens of millions of dollars. But the client, okay, face and all of that, but the client wouldn't have told the agency had the agency not asked.
My gosh. So the return on investment for that service. Yeah, yeah.
That's another reason why we'd be on the beach. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you both in a moment to wrap up, you know, where people can find out about you and how you operate internationally, et cetera, because there's lots of listeners to this podcast from the US, for example. But before I ask you that final question, I just want to ask you the question, any final pieces of advice for particularly those in account management that are listening to this? And I'm sure there's so many notes here. There's so much insight and gold. They've already got loads. But is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you? Anything that I've missed out that you would like to add?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that the fundamental thing is just don't assume, right? And make sure you are absolutely clear on the situation. Check for understanding all the time. When we do interviews with people, at the end of the interview, what we say is, okay, so this is what I've heard, right? And if once we get approval to that agreement to that from the person with whom we've spoken, then we take it away because we know that's what we're going to provide to our agency client to help them deal with whatever's come out. So don't assume and check for understanding all the time.
Great tips. Simon, anything to add?
I'd absolutely endorse that. I think listen to what's said, listen to what's not being said, and always attempt to go the extra mile.
So one last thing, all I would say is this, which is that Simon's right, right? Organizations work with organizations, but the people are the pivots of that. And without the people, things go wrong. Think of the relationship as the bubble wrap in your income, around your income. If the relationship is good, your income is secure and protected. If it's not good, your income could slip away. Think of good relationships as bubble wrap.
What a great metaphor. So, final question. Tell us about the best, who would you like to hear from as a result of this interview, if someone wants to talk to you? And tell us a bit about how the reach that RAM have. You know, there might be someone from the US, for example, listening to this that think, well, the guys sound like they've got British accents. Does that mean they got, you've already talked about Japan, so we can assume, but tell me a bit about contacting you, the best way to contact you, etc.
Get in touch with us at info@relationshipaudits.com. Go to relationshipaudits.com, that's our website. We have partners who work with us who are all experienced in doing the same stuff that we do, come from the same kind of background in the US, in the UK, obviously, in South Africa, in India, in Australia, and across Europe. So we operate globally and we act locally where necessary.
Great.
And I think the other thing to say is if you've got a problem with a relationship or you think there's an opportunity there and you just want to bounce a thought off somebody in confidence, give us a call.
Amazing. So info@relationshipaudits.com.
Yeah. That's us.
Incredible. Simon and Carey, first of all, I just want to say a huge thank you for taking the time to come and talk to me, for coming to this studio in person. How lovely. And now we're going to go to lunch. But for sharing what you've shared, there's a huge amount of value in what you do. I talk about you all the time to all the account managers and the agency owners that I know, because for me, it's probably the best investment that you're ever going to make into your client relationships and into your existing business. So thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with Simon and Carey. If you'd like notifications about future guests coming on the podcast, or notes from the episodes that I have with guests, as well as tips on agency account management and potential trainings, then you can sign up for my weekly newsletter at accountmanagementskills.com. And I look forward to speaking to you on the next one.